Welcome to the Jonah Carey Podcast, friends. Thank you so much for tuning in. You're the best. Happy holidays to everybody. Hope you are enjoying yourselves wherever you are. If you're on a sunny beach, if you're shivering in the cold, whatever you're doing, this is the last podcast of 2017. 2017 has been a fun and eventful year, and I hope that you have enjoyed yourselves and been prosperous and all that good stuff has happened for all of you. Thank you for tuning into the podcast all year long. It means a lot. Today's podcast, speaking of, is with Tim Connelly. Tim Connelly is the president of basketball operations for the Denver Nuggets. He was the general manager for the Denver Nuggets for 4 years, and he was promoted to president of basketball operations. And Tim's cool. A renaissance man, a guy with many interests. We talked about it. He made the argument for Illmatic as the best hip-hop album of all time. And we also talked about Nikola Jokic and scouting and weight training and how to beat great teams in the NBA, how to build a franchise, all that good stuff. It was a broad-ranging conversation. Tim is pretty close to me in age, seems to be pretty close to me in interests, and we just sort of bounced around. I like that. When a podcast does that, when you're, okay, let's talk about this. Oh, let's go over here. It tends to be fun and interesting, and that was how it was with Tim. Great way to wrap up 2017. My thanks to him. My thanks to everybody in the Nuggets PR office, Nick O'Hare and so forth, for helping out and making it happen. And it was a really good time. More podcasts coming up in the new year. I've got a couple more banked, and we'll be going out recording some more. And as you can expect, it'll be eclectic and different and interesting, as it always is. Sometimes we go straight up baseball. Sometimes we go straight up basketball. Sometimes we get away from sports entirely. You will have that kind of variety and kookiness that goes with the Jonah Carey Podcast. And again, the warmest wishes to all of you for the rest of this year and on into 2018. I hope that it's wonderful for you. I hope for nothing but good things for everybody listening to this and not listening to this too, I suppose. So here we go. It's the latest edition of the Jonah Carey Podcast. It is with Tim Connelly. Enjoy.
No.
So we're discussing being in the Balkans and like crazy trips, pleasure and business. And you can swear on this podcast. So go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not a big cursor.
Well, you don't have to be,
whatever. Yeah. But I can if it makes it more interesting. Just
you literally be you. It's fine.
No.
Because I love this guy. I love the road stories.
Oh, you asked for some of the how I got to appreciate the Adriatic coast so much. We were at a world championship in Novi Sad, Serbia. And we had heard these great things about the coast of Croatia. Unfortunately, there was no flights from Belgrade to Split, where it was kind of our launching point to explore the islands.
Yeah.
So the option that we thought was best was we hired a yellow taxi and actually picked up a buddy, yellow taxi, Novi Sad to Zagreb Airport, a buddy who had no international plan on his phone. So we just had to – I mean, we went there. It was a real leap of faith, hoping we'd see the
– What did we do before cell phones?
Yeah, a lot
we're old
file.
Enough to know both. I just like you. Just spatial skills. I will meet you at 3:47 in front of the statue. I don't know.
Everyone was definitely much more punctual pre-cell phones for sure. And I think dinner conversation was much more lively.
I put it away.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
I put it away as well.
Yeah.
So we get there, and it was a leap of faith. And thankfully, my buddy Russ, he's a big 6'6" guy. He's sitting outside. Sipping a Karlovac with a local beer.
Nice.
We went the next 4 hours to Split, and it was actually pretty neat. That evening, it was a handful of us. We're watching a great old Olympic game, former Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
Playing Russia, and it's
cool. This like Marcellonis and those guys, or later than that?
Later. This is no, maybe not. They had Sasha Volkov's playing, so maybe it was. Maybe Marcellonis, but Kukoc is just
killing. Yeah.
And we had this apartment with no air conditioning, and it was pretty bare bones just for the evening. And we walked out of the apartment And Tony Kukoc is sitting right in front of our apartment having coffee. Yeah, it was great. He was, we introduced ourselves. He was very nice. But, you know, one of the kind of cooler stories on the road.
And you got into the scouting. I mean, we're going to jump back and forth. But you got into the scouting element of it early, right? I mean, your entree was basically as an intern with the Wiz. And yep. then you're basically on the road, what, in your 20s, just digging, looking over under rocks at that point, I guess.
Yeah, I got really lucky where had unbelievable bosses in D.C. and Wes Unsell and Chuck Douglas and ultimately, you know, Michael Jordan and Ernie Grunfeld. Jeez and Louise. Those guys were the best. But when I started, we had a very small staff, and I was going to all the local games, and that gave me a chance to...
DeMatho. My God, what, yeah. I mean, powerhouses in D.C., ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, it's loaded, yeah. Loaded. So I thought... DeMatha was...
South Lakes High School, Reston, Virginia.
Now, I'm a Baltimore guy, Hill. Man. So DeMatha was my first high school game, though, ever. My high school, you know, RIP.
Wait, are you Tamir Goodman's age?
He's younger.
Okay.
Yeah, the Jewish Jordan.
Yeah. Well, because we're talking Baltimore area.
He was a very good player.
Yeah,
I know. Good player. He's in Israel now, I think, right?
That might be right. Yeah, he's got to be mid-30s, late-30s.
Yeah, he was a really good player.
Yeah.
Really good player.
Yeah.
No, my high school shut down, actually. Towson Catholic.
So did mine.
Yeah. What high school did you go to?
I went to Herzliya High School, a parochial Jewish school in Montreal.
Okay. Which... I was just in Herzliya for a week in...
in Israel.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Has scouting?
Yeah, I worked the NBA camp, Basketball Without Borders, in Tel Aviv.
It's serious business in Israel.
Yeah, you can't find more committed fans than Maccabi fans.
Yeah, Nadav Hennefeld and these legends that came out of there. Holy cow.
As a really proud tradition of basketball in Israel, and you know, talented players, tough players. Beautiful country, man.
Oh, ridiculous.
Yeah, amazing. Beautiful country.
Oh, sorry. So you're with the Wiz, and you're starting your scouting process.
I got lucky. We had a very small staff, and the guys who you know, were dumb enough to hire me allowed me some some leeway, and specifically internationally, we had no presence. So, you know, I remember my first international trip. I saw Antoine Rigaudeau's last game in Bologna.
Before you were like 25 or something.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. And it's all, I went to like a French All-Star game.
Cool.
Spent a week watching Boris and Diao and Michael Pietrus.
Yeah,
and,
good era for that.
It was great. Yeah. It was great. And it was also just, I'm kind of a history nerd. So culturally exposing yourself to things that you've never seen. You know, it's one thing. Seeing the Parises and the Barcelonas, but you're in these cities that you otherwise never see.
Yeah.
Novi Sad, Serbia,
yeah.
Or the Pau, France, or, you know, you're in small towns in Germany. So it was a great way to kind of not just learn basketball, but learn about the world and learn about yourself.
So tell me a little bit about growing up in Baltimore. I find there's some lore now, right? We've got the Wire. We've got these signposts of what it is. Obviously, there's different kinds of Baltimore.
Yeah.
But you're one of seven. You're growing up in that town. What does life look like in a family that big, in a town like that, in a time like that?
It was great. You know, I think Baltimore, I think we were all big Wire fans, but it's gotten to the point now where, you know, I don't want our city to be known solely for kind of a lot of the violence that unfortunately we see. And, you know, it's been a rough year with the homicide rate, again, creeping up. In terms of growing up in a big family, it's fantastic. It's all I knew, so I don't really have much to compare it to.
Right.
But, you know, very close-knit, very, you know, irreverent, very, you know, we constantly making fun of each other.
Five brothers who all ended up in basketball.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's
five for five.
It's more a byproduct, I think, of the city. And our high school was pretty good at basketball. We all went to a small co-ed Catholic school that, you know, has since shut down. But a lot of great players, I mean, going way back, Gene Shue, legendary player.
Oh, gee, Nuggets legend, right?
Yeah.
Did you play for Nuggets?
Did Gene Shue play for the Nuggets? I know he went to high school with my grandfather.
I'm going to be happy if I'm right. I'm going to be unhappy if I'm wrong.
I know his nickname is Bones, and he's got great hair. And he's a complete gentleman of a guy.
That's
great
cool.
Guy. But then fast forward, it's, you know, Carmelo Anthony's, Dante Green. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to play with the guy on my team, was a really good Division I player, was Kobe's, you know, first cousin.
Oh, cool.
Shreve Butler, another great player. But when I was there, I think my 4 years, I think we had like 11 or 12 Division I players.
Yeah.
The city itself was so chock full of talented players. So we grew up playing all sports. I mean, I used to work at Memorial Stadium. My brother, who's, you know, has coached, is working with us. He used to be a concession guy at Memorial Stadium. So baseball was probably our first love in terms of being fans.
You texted me and were like, okay, tell me about the Orioles. This is not going to go well. Everybody's going to be gone. They're going to get traded by the time this podcast
comes out. I trust the guys running the Orioles, and so my fingers are crossed. But
Dan's a smart guy.
Yeah. Now, they've done a fantastic job. And they've got some really nice guys in the PR department who one specifically was nice enough to leave me a ticket for the – I went to Kansas practice a couple years ago, and I went to the KC Royals – the Royals-Orioles playoff game. It was great.
That's fun.
It was fantastic.
That's cool.
So a huge Orioles fan. You know, wasn't basketball specific. We played all sports growing up. And in terms of the city and how it embraces the game, you're almost by accident, you don't realize how talented the guys are you're growing up with until you get to college. You're like, wow, he's going to Syracuse. He's going to Duke. He's going to Maryland.
Yeah.
And then you look up, you're 21, 22, 23, and like, all right, he's going to the NBA or
Boosie
Thornton's in Barcelona every 28 game. Marcus Hatton is legendary overseas guy. So I think you take it for granted. You just assume that most cities are like that. But D.C., Baltimore, the amount of talent and the amount of guys that have come out of these small schools and smaller programs, it was pretty cool. So it was a great way to grow up.
Do you and your brothers lean on each other? Obviously, one's running a high school recruiting service, and another guy's an assistant with the Suns. There's all kinds of stuff. But do you kind of, when you get together, is it just like talking shop, or do you almost pull back from that because that's your life and maybe we should talk about something else?
That's a great question. Yeah. It's funny. We're all obsessed with basketball. We're not obsessively basketball, if that makes sense. Man, we got a lot of different interests. So
we were just talking about comedy off recording and all this stuff. Yeah,
I've got a huge stand-up comedy guy. But so the conversations oftentimes end up back there. Mm-hmm. I think what's most beneficial is oftentimes in professional sports, you can almost paralysis by analysis.
Yeah.
You think so hard. You look at the same things over and over and over. You certainly want to avoid groupthink as much as possible. So it's fun sometimes to just sit there at Christmas or something and say, that guy stinks, and see if the four other brothers he does stink, or like, no, actually, I disagree. I think you're missing something. So the kind of the purity of the conversation is helpful. And we talk about basketball all the time, but it's not like we get home on Christmas and it's put the presents away. There's a time and place to be kind of a basketball nerd, which is pretty much all the time. But when we're around the family, we try to be just normal.
I got to ask you, since we're doing outside interests, I read an interview where you describe Illmatic as maybe your go-to.
And then,
so we need to get into this. Is Illmatic the best hip-hop album of all time?
I mean, I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
So beats Biggie, beats anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, it's a heck of a conversation.
Yeah, Well, we got time.
I think Illmatic, lyrically, the stuff Nas is saying is just, you can listen to it now and pick up a line that you hadn't picked up, and I have five albums on my phone, that's one of them. But
I feel like this is like Kendrick will have the same sort of legacy.
He's super talented.
Yeah, in that way.
I think it's disappointing when you see the old versus young arguments. Like, there's really talented guys now.
Different kind of flow, style, all of it.
Yeah, it's so I got a kick out of how Nas has been thrown in kind of the media world with some of this stuff. But I don't know. I think it's a great album. I think Reasonable Doubt is our close 1A.
Yeah.
We got Nick O'Haron here, our PR guy, he and I are
ready to die.
Huge hip hop head. He gave me a couple really cool hip hop books.
What's that tribe?
Tribe Called Quest is
no, but that one album, the
Low End Theory.
Low End Theory, yeah, that's
Low End Theory. Really kind of digging deep. I think Black Moon had a billion album. So it's, but the idea that you can only if you like old, you can't like new. I think it's. I don't get it. There's a lot of really talented artists out now.
There's an interesting thing I read, which makes sense, that apparently when you get to 33, your new music radar shuts off, either because that's the median age in which you have children, or something happens.
Eddie Murray's somehow involved, huh?
I guess it's
33, right?
I'm wearing, I got my Larry Bird's, so I got the 33.
Eddie Murray,
Patrick Ewing, Larry Walker.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. 33 is at the meaning? No, 42 is the meaning of life. Yeah. But, I don't know about that because I definitely feel that. Music thing sort of shut off. I mean, I'm aware, but I don't have the same affinity.
Very funny timing, that question. I literally, and Nick and Cody, and another one of my great PR guys, helps me out in music. I literally yesterday went to two of our players and said, text me some names of new artists. Because,
Jamal's going to give you all Canadian stuff, which I love. Right? Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, he's going to go. Wilson is real. Wilson Chandler is a very bright guy.
Oh, yeah. I played NBA Jam with him at the one-off.
He's great. He's the best.
So
he's going to give me some names. I asked Will Bart, and, Will's like, how street do you want it?
How street do you want it?
Just give me good music. Gary Harris is actually really knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Musically. So I'm looking forward to all those guys that they're going to get back to me because I agree. It's like how many different times can I listen to the Beatles and Eyes and the Strokes. Like,
yeah.
Or can I hear the same Tribe album when I go for a run for the 18th millionth time?
Right.
So I'm looking forward to something new.
So we talked about the scouting as being one entree into the industry, and you also worked as a video coordinator for a little while. Yeah. And it's so interesting to me, the path of video coordinator. Sometimes you become a video coordinator, okay, that's, you know, that's how it goes. And sometimes it's like, oh, you become a general manager later. What kind of skill set do you develop just crunching and crunching and looking at so much footage?
Again, I was lucky. The guy I worked for, Jim Lynham Jr., you know, H, is one of my best friends, and he was the lead video coordinator and had, you know, he's one of the brightest basketball guys I've ever been around. Mm-hmm. You know, grew up around it. His dad's a legendary coach. You know, sister, great, you know, great in the media. So what was cool about that was every day, you know, not just crunch videos, but you had a supportive boss who was, you know, trying to, you know, we were always arguing or challenging each other. You like this guy, I don't like that guy. Mm. And, it, you know, he knew my coaching wasn't something I was super interested in. At the time, I was trying to get in college coaching pretty hard. You know, thankfully, no one hired me. So it's a great entry point because you got to watch so much and you got to learn and you got to interact with every level of the staff, from the GM to the head coach to the players. And then, you know, when you're always around the facility, you develop, you almost forced to become the player development guy, you know, as well, because you're always there.
So especially on a small staff.
Small staff, great staff, a staff that allowed people to grow. So I think they were really fun times. And then you're in D.C. So between Philly and Richmond, I went to every game that mattered. So it's not like it's hard to see very good basketball at that point. I mean, you go see GW, you go see Maryland, you go see George Mason, you drive to see Richmond, you see VCU, and you go north, you have – obviously, you know, Coppin, Morgan, Loyola, UMBC, you get the Philly, UVA. So it was video, you know, 70%, 30% was, okay, I'm done, and, you know, UVA's playing Maryland tonight, or I want to go see the kid at Niagara's playing at Loyola. So it was fantastic.
Calvin Murphy?
yeah, Calvin Murphy.
Maybe not a kid by that. Yeah. The only Niagara guy I could think of.
Yeah, Niagara's had some good players. I'm disappointed Loyola left that conference. That was a great conference for a long time.
Yeah.
So I think when you look at all those things collectively, it's a great way to learn because, you know, you don't know anything. I mean, I was an obsessive basketball fan, but, you know, you think you know everything until you're able to see some of these really bright basketball minds, how they act, how they interact. You know, from my seat, what's been great too, I've probably seen, you know, 500 coaches run practices.
Wow. So
don't quote me that number. I would guess it's probably more, but to see how so many bright minds and how they do it. And so it's all, you know, you just got to keep open your eyes open, your ears open, because everything's a chance to learn. And again, in D.C., the guys I learned from, the Wesses and the H's and the MJ's and the Ernie's and Tommy Shepherd's and Milton Newton's and just great guys. Then you get to New Orleans. And the guys in New Orleans, again, you get that. I was actually in Croatia when New Orleans called.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great with a couple buddies, which was one of those, like, life moments, kind of surreal moments.
Yeah.
But we get to New Orleans, same thing. The one thing I can say that with complete certainty is I've been very fortunate where anybody I've worked for has cared about my growth. And I think it's...
So there's no fear of, oh, here comes the next guy.
No, I've been very fortunate.
That's great.
I think...
Because that can happen in any industry.
Yeah, it's disappointing. You know, we use the term quite often, like hold ourselves the same standards we hold players to.
Yeah.
So I think the best teammates are selfless teammates oftentimes. So we try to be as selfless as possible. And if there's not growth internally, I think we're not doing our job. Because certainly I'm a prime example of a guy that was unbelievably lucky to have guys who were like, no, do this.
Yeah.
So to get this next step, you need to do this. You need to do that. So I think every step of the way, I've just been on the right side of luck.
I like the nitty-gritty. I like details. When these 500 coaches, these 800 coaches, these guys that you've observed, anything stand out to you as like, oh, wow, I've never seen that. You know what I mean? Like the football team, the high school football team that never punted.
Yeah,
like you run across, what, this, really? Could we do this in the NBA?
Yeah, I think there's so many neat guys I've seen. And I think Dayon was the coach of Mega, who, you know, who played, who helped with Nikola's development in Serbia. Dayon was like a 6'5 and a half center in one of the most physical leagues in the world. Great guy. You know, has some great brawls online, if you want to.
Amazing.
Yeah. You know, he stands out not in that regard, just a guy that has such an atypical approach to development, knowing that, hey, I made it as a 6'5" center, you know. So I could
Chuck Hayes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Chuck's a good buddy who, you know,
was that right?
He worked here and he's on to bigger and better in Houston. So we missed Chuck a ton. But I Chuck, no disrespect, Chuck. Dayon was a probably better offensive player.
I mean, Chuck would have
been a scorer.
But you know what? Who's defending better than Chuck? Who uses his body better than Chuck?
Chuck's a fantastic defender. We try to get Chuck into tennis, and he's still working on his game. But see a guy like Dayon, who's so atypical as an approach. Mm. You know, there's so many great coaches out there. It's going to a Michigan practice, I think, 8 years ago and seeing Coach Boeheim, who's, you know, brilliant.
And the 1-3-1 and the way that he did, which is the oldest, you know, people have been running the 1-3-1 for 70 years, but it was like, oh, this is how you stifle the other team.
He's blasting hip hop, you know.
Yeah,
and
interesting.
And it's, you know, it's funny. He's a guy like Coach Boeheim. You see him now. You don't. Coach was all over the place, you know, upstate New York and at Canisius and at West Virginia and Richmond. So it's you know, if that's really new too to see now. Since started interning for the Wizards in '96, maybe the Bullets then. Bullets '96. To see a lot of these careers come full circle. See guys that were, you know, managers now or high level head coaches.
Yeah.
Or see guys like Boeheim. I've watched him on every step. You know, I was at Fordham, my best friend's playing in Manhattan, watching Canisius play and watch the development of, you know, not just players, but coaches, front office guys. That's been a neat byproduct of being around for a long time.
70 follow up questions, but let's start with this. So, obviously, you're not video coordinator anymore. You haven't been for a long time. But I'm wondering about what it was like in the 90s versus now when you've got SportView at your disposal. You've got so much stuff.
So much harder.
You've got to almost have an advanced degree in some kind of tech to really nail the job. I would think that that's got to be one of the prerequisites.
No, it's so much. So it's really funny. My first kind of – the first duty I remember was two things. Picking up Galen Nickerson from the airport, who were signing him for a 10-day.
Mm-hmm.
Nervous as can be. Three. Taking, oh my gosh, man, I'm not going to forget his name.
You're asking me to
Charles, NC or? State, big Charles Shackelford to the
Charles Shackelford,
Charles Shackelford to Sibley Hospital in DC.
Oh no!
And when the doctor came out, I think they thought that Charles and I were more than just friends, you know. So the doctor kind of explained what was going on. I said, I'm not the significant other. And I'm not a doctor.
Yeah,
I'm not getting paid. So I'm an intern. Can you call my boss and tell him?
I remember Charles Shackle.
Yeah, Charles Shackle, great guy.
Lorenzo Washburn, Cozell McQueen.
Yeah, we can go through the All the NC State guys, man. I had to give a video. The Bullets are playing at Baltimore, and our head video guy asked me, can you have another tape? Because you have to mail tapes after games to Hoop One. So you had to, every night, you had to give a tape to the ref, and then FedEx taped Hoop One, so they'd have to be a library essentially in Jersey. So we had cable. My cousin did it, and it was messed up. The first like
this isn't that long ago. We're not talking about the '60s.
This is '96.
Yeah, right.
My cousin and I was, I was you know, scared to death to give it to him. And I thought like this is the one tape of the, you know, the one copy they have, or, you know. And he was thank God he's a great guy. He's like, we have that was just an extra, man. You're good.
I was
nervous. And then that's next year. He and I went to New Hampshire to train on Avid, which is an editing system, which is big in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty challenging. It was, you know, it was a Hollywood editing system. They were making sports specific, and everything then was on 131, 42, I want this play, and everything was handwritten, tape to tape. So it was very time consuming. Now with technology, it's the easiest thing ever. It's great. But there's
more robust data, more robust information.
It is, but it's at your fingertips.
Yeah,
you know, it's
so it's what you do with.
You can work Windows, if you work a Mac.
Yeah.
You know, and we have fantastic video guys. Not to diminish their skill set by any stretch, but if you have any technological background, it's point and click.
We talked about development and player development, and I met your general manager just over there.
And
we had a good chat about it. We were talking about bodies, and I want to get into Jokic. Like, I'm a Jokic super fan. We'll do that, but the nature of there's many aspects to player development, but sometimes it could just be as easy as strength and conditioning. And Steve Hess is so good. Jokic, can I say what he said in that room? What
you can say?
He had moobs. You know that he was not right.
Yeah,
he was not in shape.
Yeah,
you know, and a guy like Brandon.
I guess it takes one to know one. That's clips out.
Wow, you know, but Giannis and these guys were either real thin or
no, he's not. Look, he does not have a sexy body.
Yeah.
You walk in the gym, you're not like, I want that guy, the guy with the 24-inch vertical.
But how big a difference is it from college or playing in, you know, in the Balkans or whatever to here? Like, how big a leap is that in terms of – we can start with strength and conditioning. Let's go to the other facets of player development after that.
I think the NBA, our influence and the influence of international basketball, certainly NBA fueled, but USA Basketball fueled as well, has become so worldwide impactful that – the difference is certainly talent, but it used to be, it was almost like going to restaurants. You went to a Greek game, you knew you were going to get this.
Yeah.
You go to an Italian game, you get this.
Yeah.
I mean, our tourists can speak to it better. So when I first started doing it, if I went to see Aris play Pauk, okay, I know it was going to be this brand of basketball.
Uh-huh.
If I'm going to see Partizan play Vezda, it's going to be this brand of basketball. And I think what's happened, and it's improved the game internationally, it's made it a bit more boring as the world's gotten smaller.
Yeah, there's more homogeneity in the style.
Absolutely,
of play.
Yeah. I was looking for a word like that.
Yeah.
Could not get it.
What I'm paid to do. No, but like the trapezoid lanes and, you know, more free flow. And people Euro step here now. Like it was only there.
And
now
the technology, the information.
Yeah,
so
that's
if you said, you got to see Bota Roga's, it was hard to get it. Talk about video. It was hard to get. I remember there was this Thiago Splitter played Johan Petro in a European Championship game in a dark gym, and getting that tape was hard. And it was not an email way. It was like I don't know how many teams had it, but it was a badge of honor. You had the tape. You had to know certain people. You had to get the tape, and it was a really low quality tape because the lighting was terrible. But now, if I want to see what the coach is running for the Brisbane Bullets, you know, it's clicks away, and I can see what Brisbane's running on both sides of the ball. So I think it's, on a macro, it's fantastic because it's improved our sport. It's made the game, I think, maybe the number one game internationally. And there's a debate. Football certainly has the numbers, but I think basketball is on its heels.
Well, especially if it starts to break through in China and stuff. Then you're starting to get to the next one.
My brother just did coaching league in China with the NBA. And
he had a
fascinating stat. I don't know if it's factual, but we'll take it at face value that there's more people playing in China than there are people in the United States. More active basketball players.
How many people? 1.3 in China? Yeah. Something like that? That's okay if a quarter of the country's playing.
I said like 350 to 400 million people play basketball on a regular basis. So it really, really needs that. Very encouraging about where the game's going. But
Yao had to be such a big influence.
For sure.
I mean, come on. Yeah. For sure. Anyway, go ahead.
And the CBA is a good league, and the NBA's done a great job engaging that market. But it was cooler when it was like, oh, it's a Serbian game. Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
So it's that part from like the kind of the basketball geek and the basketball fan is kind of disappointing because I liked how unique each country was and how unique their games were and how they played.
I went to a Euro Final Four a few years ago.
Where'd you go? What city?
It was in Barcelona.
Yeah.
At the old place, the old arena.
Yeah.
And it was...
I've been to a couple in Barcelona.
The big Greek, Olympiacos.
Yep. Not really narrowing it down. They're there like...
Yeah, right. The big Turkish team was there.
Okay.
Right, that narrows it down too.
Let's say Maccabi's there and Ceska's there.
Maccabi's not there.
How many years ago? Like three or like
this
eight?
This is like 2009.
That was there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It was fun. It was really cool. And you did see a different style of play.
Yeah.
God, I can't remember the Greek point guard's name, but he just had this. He was very Rubio-esque. You know what I mean? There was just that
Papaloukas.
Sort of look. It might have been. He was a veteran. Like, he was in his 30s. And he just had this. Like, there is no NBA point guard equivalent, really. Just sort of slithered. I found that very interesting just watching it. And it was the first Euro Final Four I'd ever been to.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd have been to a Euro game, period. I was just like, oh, this. And the crowds, it's like soccer crowds.
Yeah, I was at, I'm trying to remember when I was
the
at
Greek
that.
The Greek crowd and the Turkish crowd, they're just like so chanting, and it was great. And I'm just like, why don't we have this in America?
It's fantastic. It's the, and even the crowds are still unique. You go to If you go to a French league game, it's what's the horn the World Cup?
The Vuvuzela.
It's that drum. Yeah. If you go to a Serbian game or a game in Greece, like your lungs are done with the smoke.
You ever been to a baseball game in Japan?
I've never been to Japan. I heard that's really nice.
As a baseball, I know you like baseball. Yeah. Oh my god! Yeah. I went to Tokyo Dome. It was
really cool.
So cool. Every player has his own song.
Yeah.
And they give you a song sheet. I don't speak Japanese, but I had a friend who was bilingual, was from Brooklyn. He's like, okay, here's what you do. Okay, Nori Aoki's coming to the play. Okay, rooting for the Yakult Swallows. And it was so immersive. And you, like, instead of you go for beers, these beer girls come down, and they got like 90-pound kegs on their back. They probably weigh 90 pounds. Yeah. And they're just like, and you know, it's just like a party. It's so cool. It's so unique.
What's the old song, speaking Japanese? Or what's
turning Japanese?
Is Does anyone have that song for their approach?
All I know is when I was riding the subway, they were like, because I'm 6'4" and white and pale, and they're just like, like I was an alien. It was great.
Oh, you're a third baseman?
Something. It could have been maybe a third baseman. Yeah, so going back to, because we got sidetracked.
It's going
to
drive me nuts who won. It was 2008, right?
8 or 9.
Oh, it's going to drive me nuts who won that.
I was freelancing. It was ESPN Mag. Could have been 10.
No, I think you're right. I think
it's right in that zone. Player development and particularly strength and conditioning. So a guy like Jokic comes in.
Yep.
And he's a piece of clay.
Yep.
What happens here? Like, why is it so much better here? I just did a pod actually yesterday. I recorded it yesterday, so we're going to run it a little bit later with a guy named Lachlan Penfold.
Uh-huh.
Lachlan Penfold was the head of performance, you could say, for the Warriors last year. He now works for a rugby team in Australia. They've won 3 in a row. They're great. And it was so interesting. Like, float tanks. I didn't know anything about float tanks. Mm-hmm. And the way that nutrition is done. And it was just, it's so immersive that I found it fascinating that it was just, oh, yeah, you could take this guy, and when you're scouting a freshman at Duke, when you're scouting a Brandon Ingram, who's a stick, you're just like, yep, that guy's going to go for 20 and 10. How can you see that he's going to go for 20 and 10? But you can. Yeah. So what happens between then and now?
Well, hey, it's a guess. You can't. I mean, your fingers crossed. But the body is you know, we have a great guy just left us for e-gaming, Jared Jeffries.
Okay.
You know, one of our dearest friends and a brilliant guy. But he was the best. You know, Jared, whenever a guy would bring up a thing, oh, he's a stick, skinny, Jared would always say, I was 190 pounds.
I remember Jared.
190 pounds at Indiana. I played at 245, you know, my last 4 years in the NBA. So having guys like Jared and Chuck who are different ends of the body spectrum
is really helpful.
I think the NBA, everything is done so first class. We're fortunate. We have big-time trainers and strength coaches, you know, where when you're playing internationally, you just don't have – the resources. The schedule doesn't allow it. You're playing 2 or 3 games, you're flying commercial.
College, you're going to class.
Yeah, college, it's hard. So here, we're able to control your diet. We're able to a large degree, control your time. But it's also, the player has to be willing, because when you get to the NBA, you can really work your tail off, and it's only a 4 or 5 hour a day job. Mm-hmm. So you get here an hour early, you shoot for an hour, you go to practice and you lift. And then maybe you come back and shoot at night, maybe you watch games, but... You know, I always joke with players, you can be a workaholic on 5 hours a day in the NBA. So you also have to have players who are willing to kind of police themselves, who are self-disciplined. And I think we're lucky with, you know, Steve Hess had such a great foundation. Now Felipe's carrying the torch.
Yeah.
Carlos Daniels, big-time background. Steve Short, you know, Dan Szyminski, Jason Miller. We have a new PT who's a really bright guy, Matt, out of upstate New York. So collectively, if there's a best and brightest idea, they're always up on it, and they bounce ideas off each other. You mentioned Australia, like the rugby league, rugby union, Aussie rules football. Those guys are
well. The Ben Simmons story.
Yeah, they're some of the most intelligent guys in the world.
Yeah.
How we approach it. We're also lucky where the family that on our team has interest in an EPL team in Arsenal.
Of course.
So information share there with the Rams, with the Avalanche. I think the Rapids are really cutting edge for what they're doing with the MLS stuff. So collectively, I'll be in these rooms. Now, I don't get a third of it. It's like Latin to me.
Yeah.
But having the confidence that we have guys in those positions that are really smart, really passionate, and always looking to challenge themselves. And you know, that field is so forward-thinking. You know, it's so... It's like technology. Whatever you bought a year ago is already outdated, and that's how that field is. So when you get a guy like Nikola, I mean, there's going to be limitations. You're not going to give him a 35-inch vertical.
Yeah.
But how do you develop him in a way that's functional and not just aesthetically driven? And I think we've done a great job with that. And then Nicole is lucky because he's got two brothers who are great, who are very aware of working out and what they eat.
Yeah.
You know, both those guys are really into, well, his oldest brother's into every form of contact, but into MMA and different types of martial arts. So he had a pretty strong support system in place as well.
It's one thing with Jokic, too, is it's like, oh, the art of passing. Yeah. Maybe it's coming back. You know what I mean? That I grew up with Magic and Bird, and of course everybody's era when they grow up. The Jordan guy, your Jordan guy. But there's something about running an offense through passing that is so whatever. I'm a romantic and I can't get enough of it. Is that the kind of thing that is just you can't? Like these Gretzky's only come online once in a while? Or is that something that can be taught to have those kinds of instincts?
I don't think you can teach what Nikola has.
Yeah.
I think you can develop passing skills.
Yeah.
When you know, I use humor to quite a bit with our players. So I joke all the time when Gary Harris got here, I won one game early and had five assists. I said, this must be a typo because you
can't. No, he's a gunner.
He can't pass the stone. No, he's not. He's not a gunner. He's just. I joke about his lack of playmaking, yeah. And he's developed into a good playmaker.
Yeah, well, he's a great all around player.
He's an excellent player, but he's developed that. You know, he was not born with that. I think what Nikola has is so unique because some people are step ahead. He's two steps ahead. I think the passes that he's. And at times, you got to give Mo so much credit. He allows him to play through those mistakes because he'll throw some passes, maybe 10% success rate. But God, if it works, like early in the year, he tried to throw.
Well, Steph will do crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, early in the year, he tried to throw behind the back alley-oop to Wilson on a 2-on-1.
Oh, my God. Like,
yeah.
I hope you're up 30.
I don't think we were. It was. And it was. That's where.
Or maybe down 30. Yeah.
Mo was so great where. Certainly wants to wring his neck, but he also, I think, he appreciates part of the appeal and part of the real charm of Nikola is he sees those things and he'll take those chances. And if it works more than it does it, then it's worth it. But Nikola, like, if you really want to see some crazy passes, when he was his last year in Mega, his first year here, we had talked about his passing so much to the coaching staff, and he was playing traditional basketball, making good passes here, drop pass. I said, Nikola, I've seen you make every pass in the book. He has a pass. He used to make it Mega. He'd be the dive guy, catch in one motion, throw between his legs to the strong side corner. Like one motion.
How?
He just dive,
I'm watching you and I'm thinking about, wow.
Yeah. So I said, I brought that pass, I brought this pass. And I kind of obviously joking with him a little bit about being a little more creative, pushing the envelope. And he goes, yeah, but at Mega, I could make this pass. And he just kicked the ball. And I still play a lot for minutes. I'm trying to get my minutes here. So I think his brilliance is instinctive,
yeah.
But it's also Moni deserves a ton of credit where he recognizes it because there's going to be times where you want to come on the behind the back from a static position and to Wilson Chandler who's the ball was 18 feet in the air and right. He had a funny quote afterwards and said, well, I thought Wilson get that one.
He can leap a little, but come on.
Very long answer short, I don't think there's many guys. He's the best passing big man I've ever seen, and that's no disrespect to the the Waltons, the Sabonises, the Divocs, those guys are some of my favorite players of all time. What's unique to me about Nikola is ability to make the play on the move, not just from the post, from the elbow, but he can make plays on the move and on the dribble that I've never seen a center make.
Only two basketball nerds are going to appreciate this, but I have to throw this in. The best in-game pass I've ever seen. I used to be a USC season ticket holder in the early aughts. Yeah. That's like Clancy and Blue.
Yeah, yeah. I just talked about that team with Brian Scalabrine last week.
Scalabrine was the author of this pass. Yeah. That was a fun team. They went to the Elite Eight against Duke.
Who did they? We were trying to remember who did they play opening weekend? They had a big. Which I was
well because they lost at UNC Wilmington like a couple.
Yeah, Brett Blizzard's team.
UNC I was playing pickup. I used to have to guard Desmond Farmer. That wasn't.
He was
fun.
A pretty really good player.
Yeah, I was. He took it easy. I mean, he shot threes, but yeah,
he plays hard too.
Yeah, no, he was very good.
We literally, I'd never met Scalabrine, and we caught up with him before the Celtics game. Myself, Richard Jefferson, and I said that was one. I really liked that team, and that they lost to Brett Blizzard's UNC Wilmington team.
I think. Afterwards, so in 01, that was the year they. I think it was the one where they played Duke. So Brandon Granville,
really good point guard.
5'9", really 5'3", or whatever. Yeah. He dribbles up, and it's high post passing that really gets me. Scalabrine is standing on the foul line, and they've got a leaper on that team who really couldn't do anything.
Trepanier?
Trepanier.
Another draft pick, Jeff Trepanier.
Was he really? Yeah. That guy, some guys have limited skills.
Mega athlete.
But man, could he jump. 6'3", 6'4", but like leaping.
Lefty, right?
Lefty. Yeah. So is Desmond. Yeah. So Granville brings the ball up, and this doesn't look like anything is going on. He brings it up. Scalabrine goes to the foul line. I swear to God, this is true. Granville kind of throws a little looper. Scalabrine takes it. His back is to the basket. He taps it, a back tap, behind his head. This is right at the beginning of the set. They're 5 seconds in. Alley-oop to Trepanier, who dunks it. I was like, how? Do they practice that?
That was a really good team.
It was a good really team. Good team. Yeah.
Scouts, because Scout came from the junior college, and then Granville was next in point guard. Sam Clancy was.
Blumenthal was huge. In fact, I think Blumenthal was in that Euro Final Four.
Yeah, he was. David Blue.
Blue. He became David Blue. He could really shoot.
All those guys had nice careers.
Yeah.
Some in the NBA, some international. That
Clancy
was
wrecked
team.
His knee, but he would have been.
Sam Clancy was really
he
good.
He was a baller. Yeah. I want to ask you a little bit more about Jokic and kind of the first time you saw him and how that came to be. Yeah. This story's been told a bunch, and Lee Jenkins' story was great. But from a podcast perspective, you're seeing this guy, and he's just so different. It's just a different kind of skill set. What did you make of him, and did you say, oh yeah, that guy could be an NBA star, or interesting, he's got a kind of interesting blend of skills I haven't seen that much.
Well, we thought, you know, we thought he had a couple things that gave him a chance. Certainly, he was 6'11".
Yeah,
he comes from a basketball family.
Mm-hmm.
He had two things that were that stood out in terms of passing, and you know, he's a good, very good shooter, face up shooter.
Yeah,
and it was the same draft. We took Yusef Nurkic. We thought, hey, maybe those two could. You know, one's the banger, bruiser, a little more developed.
Yeah.
One's more skill, more finesse. We thought maybe it'd be a good 1-2 punch at center.
For sure. They both are having great careers.
Then also it helped that he had a lot of these international picks. You have to ask if they want to play here. You know, there's some really good players who've been drafted and never show up in the NBA. So his brother, Nemanja, was a great guy, played at Detroit and then CW Post. His girlfriend, who's the best, she'd been in the States as well. He had interest in playing in the NBA. We were very fortunate that he's got an excellent agent. Here is Jeff Schwartz, and over there is Miroslav Raznatovic, who's really, really, you know, running Europe right now. Very bright guy. We had Joffrey Laverne a year earlier, and we had taken Joffrey and let him sit over for a year and kind of sign him. So there was comfort level with who was representing Nikola. There was a comfort level that if he's good enough, the guy wants to play here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we thought, why not? I mean, it's such a crapshoot anyway. After you get outside of a top certain talent, level. He's a big, likes to play. He's a great passer, and he's got soft touch. It gives you a puncher's chance. Like in the second round, that's what we overuse that term. Does he have a puncher's chance?
House money, whatever you want to say.
Does he have a chance? Like, why would he make it? And if whatever your criteria is, if it's three, it's five, it's six, does he check enough boxes? Like, okay, he can make it because. And 6'11", passes the heck out of the ball, basketball family, you know, smart, very well coached. Mega's great. Dayon's a great coach. Intrigued by America. And then the year, we saw all that prior to the year we took him. The year that we're kind of like nudging each other was the year after we took him, when he became Major League MVP.
Yeah.
And his first game, I think we watched it. He had like 28, 13, and 6, and we're like,
oof.
Yeah. Well, he's way better than we thought.
Yeah.
So it's certainly an atypical development, and it's so much is because of just his IQ is so unique. Is he able to be effective without being the most athletic of guys or being the strongest of guys? But all those factors, without any of those factors, he probably doesn't get here. I mean, we knew that there was a vibrant European market for him.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate. We're a lot of us, and our, you know, our tourist is a legend in Europe, but we're pretty well-versed in Europe internationally. We have a lot of friends, so you're hearing things. Hey, this team's coming to see him tonight.
Yeah.
This team's coming to see him tonight. This comes to see him tonight. And this is a guy who had not made any money, you know, for Mega. So many things had to go right for him to be the player he is. And with one of those things goes astray, if the right European team offers the right contract, who knows? That's where we're lucky that we had a good relation with Mishko. Mm-hmm. We're lucky to have a good relation with Jeff. And that, you know, that was based off our time with Joffrey. So I think it's a fascinating story. I don't think it's one that we'll likely see repeated for a long time. And I don't think, he's that good. I don't think it's flukish. And Nikola is that good a player, and he's that good a player to be our foundation piece for a long time.
Couple more. I want to ask you about Blueprint, and I made our tourist wince and want to punch me in the face because I cited the...
The album?
Well, no, I cited the ESPN article. The Nuggets have the Warriors Blueprint, and it's like, whoa, buddy. But I find the idea of Blueprint and roster building, I mean, you know, when you're a sports nerd, that's how you are. Because I'm a baseball guy, there's a thousand ways that you could have a power bullpen. You could do this, you could do that. In basketball, your roster's smaller. You have to stash guys in Europe. You're capped out. There's all kinds of things that can happen to you. So bottom line is, there does seem to be some common themes where, okay, so Harris could be your, like, Clay Jr., and this guy, your focal point. Okay, Jokic ended up being a little bit better than we thought, like Steph, whatever. Oh, Millsap, like, that's the Iguodala role. Yeah. And you start to sort of fill it in, but it feels like a lot of it just depends on, is this guy good or not? Like, if Jamal is a good player, that's one thing. If Jamal's a star, the Nuggets might be a title contender. You know what I mean? Like, these things change.
Now, so much is environmental, and so much, it's so fluid. I mean, we're pretty obsessive with our planning. I've got 20 books there.
I see the boards behind us.
I've got that is all books.
Yeah, yeah.
What we write, if I showed you what we thought of Nikola 2 years ago, it's looks completely different than what we thought of him 3 months ago.
Gary's developed. Barton's become better. I mean, all these guys.
It's a testament to our coaching staff. It's a testament to, I think, patience is not just with players. It's with, we have a very patient owner. Yeah. So I think if we're going to preach patience, we have to really exhibit patience as well. So I think it's so fluid. When we went into Paul's free agency, we were barely cautiously optimistic, knowing some of the moving pieces behind
Denver's
it.
Denver's just hasn't been a traditional big ticket destination, even though it's a lovely city.
No, and then the city's fantastic. It's
ridiculously
great. It's great. So if you knew Bird in the hand, you're getting Paul Millsap going, it changes everything. You don't. So every time you make a move, it essentially you rip up your previous plan and keep moving. But I think what's important is the key pieces, like Nicola's, so much of what we do now is going to be based off Nicola. Mm. How he plays, how do we protect him, how do we complement him. So he's made our job easier for sure. But the nature of it is you can't have 17 guys now with two ways. You can't have 17 guys make it on your team. Mm. You can't have 15 guys make it on your team. So I think you want to find the 17 most talented guys that fit, and you want to try to avoid cannibalization as much as possible. But the reality is there's a guy on our roster right now who I'm sure is, I'm not talking about anybody in particular, could be anybody, but there's one or two guys on our roster right now that would like a bigger role. They probably won't get it here. We'll get it elsewhere and be a good player. It's just the nature of professional sport.
And they'll get $40 million, right? And you're
it's not going to make sense for you. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
You can't have 15 to 17 rotational players who are all playing, all producing, all getting paid. It's just not the nature of it. So I think in terms of model, we put a huge premium on IQ and skill guys. Mm. We put a huge premium on the person. I think we have 17 great guys. We have a coaching staff full of great guys. Our owners are fantastic people. So your job's a whole lot more enjoyable when they're good people. You're rooting for it. I think also when you really trust the person, that you give them chances, second chance, third chances. When you don't like the guy, you're much more apt to say, you know what, get out of here. Also, it's a mistake profession. I sent the baseball. I sent our staff an article that I read recently about the Astros after they won the Astros, they won the World Series. They're at the pinnacle. The article was great. It was how many things that they had done wrong effectively.
Interesting.
And it was a really cool article.
Well, JD Martinez, they gave away for nothing.
That's a bunch swing, of those right?
guys. Yeah, yeah.
And it's that's the nature of it. You're gonna miss. You're gonna trade the wrong guy. But the purpose of sending that article out was, let's never be governed by fear. Let's always be proactive and be aggressive. But know that you're not going to have the best 17 guys in the NBA. It's not feasible.
Yeah.
And if we try to attack every draft pick, every trade, every signing with that fear, I think you get yourself in a lot of trouble. Let's do our homework. Let's really put a high value on who the person is. Can he fit here as a guy? Is he self-motivated? Is he a guy you want to be around every day? And then just close your eyes and hope for the best.
So one last question, which I do at the end of every podcast, is I always ask the guest for a nugget of wisdom, a life tip, something that's quintessentially them. So I meet you in a bar. It could be serious or super not serious, but I meet you in a bar.
You know me, I'm always serious.
You're always serious. So I meet you, I said, Tim, what's your deal?
Yeah.
And everybody, people have come up with ridiculous answers or like, oh, well,
you've got to believe in yourself. Give me the best one you've got.
I tell this story all the time. Trey Kirby, who on the starters, NBA TV, he's great, funny guy. He says that as soon as you get to the airport, your vacation begins. Go have 62 Cinnabons. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You're on vacation. Just do it.
Trey would be about 600 pounds if he was a scout.
Trey can ball. He's a pretty good player. Yeah. So, lots of believe in yourself, lots of no fear, lots of that
stuff. I always say, I got an easy one. I always say, if someone was ever dumb enough or they just had exhausted their Rolodex and asked me to speak at some commencement ceremony, I said, it's super easy. Don't judge.
Good.
Work hard.
Yeah.
And laugh. That's it. And at last, have sincere relationships. Don't develop relationships because there's this guy. Be around people that you generally like being around. They don't have to be like you. They don't need to look like you. They don't need to share similar interests. But like, I have a wacky group of friends. Like I had my bachelor party in Rio, and it was, we had a 5'5" guy from Seoul. We had a 7-foot NBA player. We had, and everywhere in between. I mean, it looked like I should have had like a white lab coat on, like 8 or 9 guys from all different walks of life. But the only common denominator was everyone laughed at themselves. Everyone was really nice guys. They were good people. But just don't judge. Work hard. And I think if you can do those things, no matter what you're doing, the industry is going to be pretty good to you. Yeah.
Sweet. Thank you for your time. This was great, and I wish you guys the best of luck. I am very selfish, and I want to have a championship team here in Denver. So
am I. I share this. I would love to be selfish. I think we're going in the right direction. I'm proud of where the team is, especially if you told me when the season started that Paul's going to miss this amount of games and Nicole's going to miss that amount of games. And
you're right in the mix.
I love where we are right now. I think we'll only continue to get better. I think our coach staff has been fantastic. I think we have the best owner of all professional sports, and I'm not saying that to brown nose, but sincerely, the patience that he's shown us and kind of the footprint that you know, KSE has internet from LA to London. I think it's a neat thing that that we're able to really maximize and help, you know, all the franchise, not just the Nuggets. But I think we're trying to get there, man. It'd be great. I think it'd be fun, and you'll see me at a bar for sure if that happens.
Nice.
You'll see me at a bar either way.
Of course. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, man. That was fun.